Is it live? It said 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time Monday. So I was kind of hoping we'd get that call, but we didn't. And so yeah, you'll have that sometimes. But, you know, you're welcome to call in. Hey, it's time to get out of here and get out of the way for Rick Smith live from behind the Scrapple Curtain, the Rick Smith Show, coming to you live in just a matter of seconds. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size right back in the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
I think you were a little stressed out there after you. I guess it was because you're missing the family over there. You missed it because I was saying that I wanted to know that.
Hey, Rick, and
you know what I'm going to do?
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here today on the big program. We're going to be taking your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's the number if you want to join in. We're going to be talking about some of the craziness with the GOP, some weirdness that's going on with the this guy who dresses up like a Nazi. You're not going to believe this nonsense. We're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. A local couple trying to find jobs. A book was thrown at the president yesterday. The Patriot News is saying we need Goldilocks to come and save us from the Marcellus Shale and the evil Democrats who are out to tax. We're going to talk about a government intrusion into people's lives and so much more. Of course, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK. This has been just weighing on my mind since last night. I was at home watching 60 Minutes, and they were interviewing the rapper Eminem. Now, Eminem has had what I think most people know is a long history of drug and alcohol abuse. He's had a very long history of, Oxycontin, Vicodin, Ambien, and this segment kind of went through all of that. You know, they talked about his life, and what I thought was interesting, and as a side, you know, here's a guy who's, some of his music, pretty profane, pretty risque, kind of, you know, wouldn't want my kids listening to it, but some people do. Yet he said that there's no profanity in his house, which I thought was kind of interesting. He doesn't want his kids to hear it, but ours, well, you know, good luck on that. But at the end of the interview, they said, you know, hey, if you want more information about the big interview we just did with Eminem, go to our overtime section. You know, and then you can see the extra interviews, you know, where he talks about his long time drug problems. Because, you know, he almost died from drug overdose. And he goes into this long story about, you know, how he was 2 hours away and he was taking prescription drugs and he was 2 hours away from death. His organs were shutting down, Jake, and, you know, he was just lucky. Just lucky. Now he's clean and sober and, you know, just doing wonderfully. But the overtime, the overtime on the website was brought to you by Pfizer. It was brought to you by Pfizer. Come on, something.
I didn't know that, right? That's a problem.
Pfizer's a drug company.
I understand.
You just talked
that.
About a guy for, you know, 15 minutes about how he's been fighting drug abuse and he's been fighting, you know, to just stay alive. And, you know, he's alive because, you know, he beat the addiction. And it's sponsored by the drug company that damn near killed him. I mean, come on. You got that's funny stuff.
That's irony. Right? That's real irony.
I mean, that is funny stuff. You can't make that up. And my wife and I are watching it as soon as it brought to you by Pfizer. You know, we both kind of just looked at each other and go, what is this world coming to? You know, and it takes me back to the, you know, the days of Ronald Reagan and Ron and Nancy saying, just say no, kids. You know, just say no. You remember all the money that we spent on this bizarre head in the sand abstinence mentality with regard to drugs. And it shows how just out of touch conservatism is with reality. It shows just how far out of touch these folks are with the mainstream. And you look at these candidates, and we're going to talk about a lot of these people today, because there are some Lulus out there. There are some weirdo, wacko people. I'm not a witch. I'm you. Well, the only way you're me, honey, is if you are a witch. And, you know, the reality is I remember going back into high school. And, you know, when I was in school, there were drugs everywhere. Just say no. You know, it was prevalent in our society. What you needed to tell kids is you needed to be honest with them. This stuff will screw you up. And it was only illegal drugs. It was only the illegal drugs, the pot, the, you know, the whatever else. I think LSD was still big. Acid, you know, all that stuff was still kind of big. But we don't ever talk about prescription drugs. We don't ever talk about the devastation of prescription drugs on our bodies, on our environment. You know, I just saw something in the paper the other day that the EPA is having like a day where you, hey, come bring all your unused prescription drugs and we'll dispose of them because we're polluting our water so badly that the unused antibiotics are going into the water and our kids are, we're all drinking these things. And it's making us strain resistant, it's resistant to the antibiotics, and these germs are getting harder and harder to fight. But it was just ironic to me that, you know, here's this, you know, Eminem, and he just said he was on Ambien and Vicodin, and he clicked off several prescription drugs. And I just thought it was hysterical that the whole thing was brought to you by a drug company. And it shows how disconnected we are as a society and how, I guess, we're just not getting it. And, you know, I've been watching BBC television, and they had a TV on the other night, Jake. It was called Should I Smoke Dope? I love the BBC. They also had one that I watched, My Big Boobs and Me. Loved that one. But that's a whole other discussion for another day. But this woman.
Is that PG, by the way?
I don't rightly know. It was on regular TV over there, so I would assume. Although they have a much different culture than we do. But she said, should I smoke dope? And she went through this whole, because they're having the same problems with legalization that we're having. They're wrestling with the same issues. Should they do it? Should they, you know, consider it, make it legal? But she went to a couple of different people. The doctors, you know, told her don't do it because, you know, you're going to do this. And the lawyers told her you can't do it here because it's illegal. So she went to Amsterdam, you know, to try and smoke all this different stuff. And what's amazing to me, in Amsterdam, where this woman went, they have like 1,000 different varieties. And it's, I guess it's like a wine list almost over there. But she went through and, you know, she smoked dope for 30 days, kind of like the fast food guy here, only with her it was pot. And at the end, you know, she concluded that maybe you shouldn't, after you watched her do it for 30 days. And I go, you know, that is really typical. She would be a good American conservative. You know, you get somebody like O'Donnell, who basically was the town doorknob, and then she goes out there preaching abstinence only. It's this do one thing and then turn around and say, you know, the whole don't do as I do as I say, that kind of mentality. And, you know, in looking at this whole issue, and I am, you know, as I've said from a number of times, I'm not all that thrilled with the idea of legalizing marijuana just because I'm afraid of what happens when the corporations take over here. But, you know, the way this show made it sound, it's not much different than somebody getting drunk. And there was one part where she was driving a car. She got stoned, and she's driving the car, and she's doing like 2 miles an hour going, no, I can't go any faster. But then she gets all liquored up the next day, and she's doing 90 miles an hour running over the fake babies in the middle of the road. And that was really there to show you the fact that marijuana is much different than alcohol, in that marijuana, I guess, makes you paranoid. I've never done it, so I don't know. You?
Many moons ago, some was offered to me, and I took a couple of drags, but I never went out and bought it.
Did you inhale?
probably. I probably did. I mean, back then.
It was everywhere back then.
It was everywhere. Everywhere. It's amazing that I knew a lot of people that got into it, and if you came back from Vietnam, you can bet that you were doing at least that over there.
Yeah.
At least.
And what's amazed me, though, over the years, since really the Reagan war on drugs, and you think of all the money that we've wasted, we've just thrown down the drain fighting this euphemistic, really bizarre war, and that we've locked up millions of people over, is that it hasn't gotten any better. And it's not, because I do believe there are a segment of the population who, you know what, they're going to do it no matter what you do.
Let's be honest, the amounts of money we're talking about, billions of dollars, are so huge that as long as you have a demand, there will be a supplier. You can bet there will be a supplier. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, when you look at the history of the war on drugs, how many people who supposedly wore white coats were bought off? How many people were on the take?
Look at Puerto Rico.
How many law enforcement officers turned their back, you know, and they were slipped $1,000 a week? Whatever, I don't.
Well, I had a buddy. I actually had a buddy I went to high school with. I shouldn't say it was a buddy. He was a pinhead. He was never a decent guy to me. He was a couple years older than me. But he was a local cop. And he was having lunch every day at a particular establishment. And on the way out the door, someone would drop him an envelope with, $1,500 in it for just having lunch while he was in his little uniform. Because they were doing a drug deal in the back. I mean, he was just there. So it was kind of that security thing. And he ended up getting caught up in an FBI sting and ended up going to jail for it. And you go, what were you thinking? And he's going, the money was just, it was the money. And until we take the money out of it, and there's part of me that says we got to legalize it and tax it. But, who knows?
I mean, let's be honest. There's always going to be a demand, Rick.
Yep.
I don't care how many resources, how many billions of dollars we put in, how many hundreds of thousands of agents. As long as there's a demand, it's going to be met.
And what I thought was interesting, she went into a head shop, and they call them head shops there too, which I thought was interesting, that you could go into this head shop and you could buy the grow lights and you could buy everything you needed to grow any type of marijuana any that you wanted. They even sold the seeds, sold everything you could want, but you could buy it. But you couldn't actually put it together. That was illegal. And I go, what exactly is the point in that? Why would you sell somebody the seeds, sell them the grow lights, sell them all the stuff to go along with it if they can't plant it? I mean, you're just screaming for trouble. And that's kind of our whole approach to the whole drug thing.
Well, the hypocrisy is, I mean, if you want to find out how powerful nicotine is, now that's a legal drug. I've seen people who were told, hey, you got to stop smoking, or you're not going to live long.
Oh.
And they literally could not, literally with their life on the line, could not stop smoking.
Well, when my ex-wife's father was passing away, when he had lung cancer and he was dying. There was a guy in the waiting room, like where you go visit people. He was in intensive care. They wheeled him into this waiting area that you could smoke in, and he was smoking through the trach. There's a hole in his neck he's smoking through. And I go to the nurse. I go, what the? She's going, he's going to be dead in 2 or 3 days. Let him live. And I'm going, I guess at that point.
Didn't matter.
It didn't matter, but it just shows what kind of an addiction you're talking about.
I mean, you talk about, think about this. We talk about health care and we talk about health care costs. And here we have a legalized industry That's not only killing thousands of people a year, but adding untold cost to the cost of our health care. You know, smoking, it tears down the immune system. It's detrimental to our health and in so many ways, and yet it's legal. And I guarantee you those cigarette companies are making huge profits. Again, it always comes back to money.
A new field poll highlighted Sunday in the San Francisco Chronicle has said that a dramatic shift in the sentiment, nearly half of Californians likely voting now want to legalize marijuana and use it in the state. It's kind of interesting that you know, you're starting to see this movement towards it, well, where people are it's part of our culture.
Why not say, hey, look, if you want to smoke marijuana, it's okay to smoke it in your home. Well, who cares? Who cares if you smoke it in your home?
Just don't go driving down the road at really slow. You know, it's like that old Chris Rock bit. You go, I got arrested for driving slow, and you go in, the guy's in the jail going, what are you in for? I'm driving slow. I drive real slow. Drive slow. Well, drive slow all over.
I mean, you talk about the cost of society. Remember when was it? Maybe 15 to 20 years ago. Remember that? In fact, it was less than that. Three strikes and you're out. I mean, they were arresting people for, you know, possession. They get you three times. Was it mandatory 40 years? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, no, those were the three strikes and you're out was violent crimes or robbery, armed. It was
drug related. There was a three strikes and you're out drug related too.
I have to look
for a while there. Yeah, they were nailing people. I might be overstating. It might have been three, but that's ridiculous.
That's good for the prison industry.
Comparatively soft crimes, and because a politician wanted to whatever. Look good, and he wanted to be tough on crime. He said, if we catch you and we nail you on a drug charge three times, you're going to jail. Mandatory minimum, no exceptions.
Well, who was that running back for the Steelers? Was it Jerome Bettis? Was that who it was? Who was it? There was a guy, he had a whole garbage bag full of it in his car. I think it may have been. I'm going to check into that. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. SEIU and a coalition of community groups is calling for a national freeze on home foreclosures. Several big banks, including Bank of America and JP Morgan Chase, have suspended foreclosures temporarily due to illegal and sloppy documentation. In some cases, the banks are unable to legally prove they own the homes that they're busy taking away from working families. SEIU wants a freeze on foreclosures and for Wall Street to refocus their efforts to help keep families in their homes by agreeing to principal write-downs and mortgage modifications. The recent FBI raids on peace activists, union members, and university employees in Chicago and Minnesota's Twin Cities are efforts to intimidate activists. That's according to Chicago attorney Melinda Power.
Government cannot have the right to stop people from exercising their First Amendment rights to express their public opposition to what the government is doing here in the United States, in Afghanistan, or anywhere in the world. The government is saying, you cannot say we don't like what the government is doing. We are here because we think, yes, people have a right to publicly object, to demonstrate, to march, to voice our oppositions to the policies of the government.
The September 24th raids included 20 FBI agents barging into the Chicago home of SEIU Local 73 union steward Joe Isobaker. The FBI stayed for 12 hours, searching through everything in the home and taking away a host of personal items.
We denounce the FBI raids. These raids, searches, and grand jury investigations are nothing more than an attempt to intimidate us and to intimidate the anti-war movement. We have done nothing wrong. We're being targeted because we oppose the criminal wars and occupations launched by our government in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The FBI targeted anti-war activists, Arab American activists, and activists against U.S. military aid to Colombia. The government claims it's part of an anti-terrorist investigation. The activists maintain their actions are peaceful and lawful exercises of their constitutional rights. In New York City over the weekend, more than 80 congregations throughout the city called for the city council to pass the Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act. Living Wage Weekend was part of a larger, sustained push to raise wages for working people in New York. Clergy sermonized on the morality of economic justice for working people as they urged passage of the measure over the weekend. The Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act requires wages of at least $10 an hour, indexed to inflation, in large development projects that get public subsidies. This newscast made possible in part thanks to underwriting from the OPEIU, Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange. Time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for
change. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. It wasn't Jerome Bettis. I was wrong. It was Bam Morris. I actually got, 30 months in jail, fined like $7,000. I got an email during the break. Rick, have the corporations taken over the marijuana markets in Holland? Why do you think if we follow an existing model that corporations will take over this market here? Why are you so totally fixated on this particular model of marijuana legalization? I got to be honest with you, Ronald. The libertarian part of me says we legalize it and people will make the choice. I'll never do it simply because I know myself. So it's not an issue to me, and it's not something that I'm overly interested in. This whole conversation came out of that M&M thing, which I just think is amazing. I don't care one way or another, other than for my kids. And I hope that I will teach them, when the time comes, and it will come, where they're going to have to make the choice. And it's going to be their choice. There's nothing I can do one way or another. I either educate them now and help them make the right choice. Or, you know, they're going to figure it out on their own. And hopefully the mistake that they make young isn't the kind of mistake that is going to follow them for the rest of their lives. And, you know, and I've told that to other kids that I've mentored. I said, look, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to make tons of them. I've made thousands of mistakes in my life. Just make sure that they're not the kind of mistake that follows you until the day you die.
I mean, to be fair to him, the Soviets kind of feared him. They thought, you know, this guy, we think, may push the nuclear button, but at a huge expense. And, you know, he told you what he was about.
But you got to understand, I mean, in some of the history that I've read of the Soviet collapse, they were collapsing anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
You didn't need that.
Absolutely.
You didn't need to break this country.
I laugh at the conservatives. You know, he was this icon. Look. From the first day, the end of the World War II, the first day, we were involved in a Cold War. They called it the Cold War, and in simplest terms, it was an economic race and a race for arms. We outspent them. Our system outspent them and spent them into oblivion. But it was from 1945 on.
And let's not forget you can say what you want about Reagan. What really broke the Soviet Union was 16 years in a quagmire, 16 years in a war in Afghanistan. And this is a lesson that we never talked about. It was Ronald Reagan who brought them down. No, it was the fact that they expended a good portion of their resource in Afghanistan. And, you know, hello, here we are 30 years later in the same mess that they were in. I think we need to learn a lesson.
If you really study that period when the Soviets were in Afghanistan, they didn't have any compunction about going in and just massacring whole groups of people. You know, if they thought you were the enemy, you were dead. They killed literally hundreds of thousands of Afghanis and still lost the war. Still lost the war. And here's the irony. They call it the Soviet Vietnam. There are a lot of comparisons. There's a lot of stories that came out of the Soviet Union at that time of soldiers coming back, you know, and having mental problems, drug problems for the rest of their lives. Very comparable to what we went through in Vietnam.
Yep. Still haven't learned the lesson. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
But all right, just make us be brave, make us play nice, let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart, the voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You'd say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
What the hell are we doing in Afghanistan, you ask? According to Washington's War Hawks, we're there to win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people. Key to this strategy, we're told, is to establish the legitimacy of the central government, led by the famously incompetent, vain, arrogant, aloof, and corrupt president, Hamid Karzai. And how's that going? Well, at least they pulled off a national parliamentary election in September. It was meant to show democratic progress, thus bolstering the stability and credibility of the government. Unfortunately, there were some unpleasant incidents during the balloting. Boku unpleasantness. More than 3,000 cases of gross electioneering fraud have poured into the Election Complaints Commission, with nearly 60% of them considered serious enough to have affected the outcome. How gross, you ask? In Kandahar province, where the president's brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, rules as an autocratic strongman, some 50 parliamentary seats were being contested. Amazingly, the list of winners were all from Karzai's political faction. And, get this, Ahmed Wali had the list of winners in his hands before the election. In a third of the provinces, the fraud was blatant and widespread. A cell phone video, for example, caught officials in one district polling place haggling with a candidate over the price of buying votes. In another district, local police handcuffed and removed three groups of election workers from their polling places, then presented the, quote, results for them to sign at the end of the day. In a northern province, gunmen slapped, dragged, and otherwise coerced people to go to polling places and vote for the gunman's candidate. This is Jim Hychar saying, this so-called election shows that there's nothing legitimate about Karzai's government, and nothing legitimate about America's involvement in Afghanistan. It's time to get out of there.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman. Even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Paul Krugman had an interesting article this fine day talking about the stimulus. And, you know, the premise is that What the Republicans are saying is that, well, Obama's this great big spender, and government's just intruding into every portion of our lives. You know, all this big government is taking away our freedom. And yet, when you ask them one thing, just, you know, hey, one thing, buddy, tell me one thing that, one freedom that you had pre-Obama, what'd you have? Did you take your guns away? Oh, well, no. Did bullet prices go up 5,000% like the NRA told you it was going to? No. In fact, the only reason it went up is because a bunch of you idiots ran out and hoarded them, causing a shortage, which, you know, the bullet people were very happy for, and the people who sell them were even happier for. And, you know, hey, that's what helps the economy. But as far as saying, well, you know, we've made these massive expenditures that are historic, no, it's not true. And Krugman accurately points it out, because we've done nothing really major. I mean, we've done a little bit around the edge. The stimulus was not a huge stimulus. In fact, most of it just went to helping the states stay afloat. Most of it went to just keeping people from collapsing, unemployment. We didn't have any massive building like I want. I would say, you know, a train that went all the way across this country would be a great idea, with some spurs going to the smaller cities. If he did that, I would say, yeah, I would say it's good, but I could see how you would say, well, that's creeping socialism. The health care bill, is that, you know, creeping, is that socialism? No, it hasn't really taken effect yet. So it's really not a big government program. You know, nothing. You know, there's just nothing that they can point to. But they need that talking point. They need, well, all that spending, you know, they gave it to the, you know, those beggar people who are now paying it back. And I guess you could get an argument one way or another that it was an okay thing to do. We were going to get our money back, even though it was a crummy investment, I think. Crummy investment.
Well, the truth was that money went out of Washington so fast that there weren't enough guidelines, but the basic concept was absolutely correct. We didn't have any choice.
And there are no huge benefit programs for working people. There are no, you know, no expansions in welfare programs for the poor. None of that stuff. But we keep hearing about it. It never occurred. None of this happened. And what I said right from the very beginning when the stimulus came out, I said it should have been at least double. And if you remember, we talked to Greg Palast right after it was passed. And Palast said, look, I want chunky, I want big, I want something that's going to jumpstart this economy, that's going to get money into people's hands, not corporations, people's hands, get them spending again, you know, get this thing going. But it just didn't happen that way. And why didn't it happen? You could make the argument, and I will, that the Republicans are the ones who blocked it. But there were a number of bent-knee conservative Democrats who were just as bad.
How bad?
And, you know, this idea that, oh, government is just growing too large and intrusive. The fact of the matter is, folks, we've lost 350,000 government workers. Gone since 2009. So where is this big government we're talking about? I'm seeing it shrinking. I'm seeing teachers being laid off. I'm seeing policemen being laid off. I'm seeing government shrinking. So where's the big government at? Where's the intrusion? I had an interesting dinner with a friend here this evening. And we were talking about the Patriot Act, going back to the days of the Patriot Act. And he goes, you know, when I take callers on the program that he sits in for, he said, you know, you get these people who just spew this stuff. Oh, big government's intruding in my life. And he goes, well, where were you during the Patriot Act? Well, that's fine. Because they don't know what the Patriot Act is. Because the right-wing talking heads didn't say, this is bad. All they know is that Obama, socialist, Muslim, fascist, or communist, or yeah. And it's like the short circuit in their brain going, because that's what they've been told. There's, you know, and there's no real filters going through there. And I defy someone. Tell me what's socialist about this guy. What is socialist about Obama? Nothing. The health care bill kept private insurance companies intact. I wouldn't have done that. I would not have kept the for-profit system intact. Would not have. I would have opened up Medicare for everybody. Now, the private for-profit companies would have been contracted to do the billing and to do all the work that has to go into that program, like they are now. But at the end of it, you got to suck the profit out of it.
We could, if we ever get to that, and before you and I die, hopefully we will. I mean, we can adapt a system similar to Canada. I know the Canadians, when you mention, or the Conservatives, when you mention Canadian, they have a terrible system and the Canadians don't like it. Well, that's just a flat-out lie. The last poll I saw in Canada, it was 92% of the Canadians had a positive reaction. My point is, we could do what they do, and it works very well. They have their national health care system, and then they have what we know in this country as a Medigap. A supplement. Call it what you want. It's something a little bit better. And if you want to basically contract with a private insurer to maybe close a few of the loopholes, that's fine. We could easily adapt that kind of system, and it would work fine in this country.
Which is what Medicare basically is, and this is what I've been saying. You have a baseline of protection, a baseline of security, to where, you know what, if I have a heart attack sitting here today, my family's not going to be homeless. And that's really what this is about to me. You know, I'm worried about my kids. I got three kids I got to worry about. Something happens to me tomorrow, somebody's got to take care of them. And I shouldn't have to worry about losing my home if I get sick. It shouldn't have to happen. But in this environment, this pay or die environment that we're in, this is what we've been sold. And you know, as Krugman points out, the reality is none of that stuff has happened. None of the big government stuff that they claimed has happened. And, you know, had we done what Krugman and others said, and much bigger stimulus, you would have seen the job growth. It just didn't happen because it wasn't there.
Actually, in Pennsylvania, if you look at the numbers, I mean, forget about the rhetoric and forget about the politics. Look at the real numbers coming out of Pennsylvania with the stimulus. You go back to the early part of the year, they had only used, of the $22.6 billion, they used about a quarter of it, and they had created in excess of 80,000 jobs. Now you multiply that times four, if in fact they create jobs at that same rate, that's 350,000 jobs in a state of 12 million. That's not bad. Is it enough? No. But for the money, we got a good bang for the buck. And again, if you look at the numbers, people say, what was it, close to 800 million, billion? The
767.
Close to 800 billion, you know, and they would
need his paperback book. Here's my thing. And, you know, maybe I'm not the best guy to ask on how to get someone's attention, but I don't think taking off all of your clothes in a crowd of 19,000 people is a good idea. It will get you attention. I just don't know that it's the kind of attention that you really want. And I don't know that tossing a paperback book at the President of the United States is another way to get good feedback. That's one of those things that generally gets you arrested. They took him into custody. They talked to him for a little bit and said, well, you know, the guy's a kook, and they let him go. He's harmless. But, you know, I saw that, and I'm going, really? A naked guy tossing a book at the president? In this country, that could get you put into one of those little white rooms where they have, like, padding on the walls and those jackets that have the arms that tie.
Did he really write a book?
That's what the article said. You know, he tossed the book. The man had written a book and hoped the president would read it, according to spokesman Ed Donovan. Donovan said agents concluded the man posed no danger. Obama seemed not to notice the book that landed near him on stage after he finished his speech. The president turned his back to shake hands with a couple of people along the side of the stage. So the book hit the ground and didn't even know what came near him. The Secret Service grabbed the guy up, and there are pictures of him, you know, walking away with signs around him. And I'm going, okay, I get the idea. You know, hey, read my book. You toss the book to him or whatever. Take your beating. You know, at least you had, you know, because that's in the old days, that's what would have happened. They'd have taken him out back and made a citizen out of him. But taking off all your clothes, I don't know. I don't know. Not for me. But, you know, this is the kind of crazy you get on the left. You get crazy, you know, nudists, you know, throwing, tossing books to people. On the extreme right, you get another kind of crazy. And from the from John Byrne, he writes, the 45-year-old highway shooter who engaged in a 12-minute shootout with California Highway Patrol officers earlier this year now says Fox News host Glenn Beck has been his inspiration for his activity. In the several thousand-word expose for Media Matters, Pacifica journalist John Hamilton interviewed the so-called highway shooter Byron Williams from prison. In the interview, Williams details what he saw as an elaborate global conspiracy and tells the journalist, whom he sees as media advocate, to look to specific broadcasts of Beck's show for information on conspiracies he described. Media Matters says Beck's shows provided information on conspiracy theory that drove him over the edge, an intricate plot involving Barack Obama, philanthropist George Soros, a Brazilian oil company, BP, midgets, a hooker, and a couple of monkeys. I added the last three. But, you know, I mean, it's nuts, just plain nuts. And what really, I had dinner tonight with Eric Epstein, who's, you know, the a guy who sits in for the right over there on one of the local crazy shows. And what we were talking about is what the right has done a masterful job of doing is getting people like this to buy in that Obama's this evil character that needs to be dealt with because, you know, the fate of the country and we're fighting for freedom and liberty. Yet they were nowhere during the Reagan years when Reagan was doing the stuff he was doing. With the Contras, he was nowhere around. They were nowhere around when Reagan was spending billions of dollars. They were nowhere around when H.W. Bush had his stuff going on, all the stuff that went on in Nicaragua and all the stuff that we don't even know about. They were nowhere to be found during the Patriot Act fight, none of that stuff. But now the black guy comes into power, doesn't really do anything to rock the boat, in my opinion. I mean, he has not done what I had hoped he would do. But now the world's coming to an end.
Well, doesn't that feed into, I mean, there were some, there before he was even elected, there were rumors that he was the Manchurian candidate.
Yes.
And I had, again, people that normally are pretty lucid, intelligent people tell me that. And you just got to look at them and shake your head and say, good Lord. I mean, do you really believe that?
You know, the great thing about doing this program is, especially on the side of the fence that we are on, is that none of the people who listen to our program call and do that hero worship thing. We never get to, oh, you're absolutely right. Magadanos.
I can't understand that.
No, because everything we talk about, people want, our side of the fence wants verification. I don't take anybody's word for anything. I've got to look for it myself, and I've got to verify it myself. As where, you know, I got a lot of friends who listen to the you know, the right wing talking heads, and everything's gospel. Fox News is gospel. I don't need to check it. It's Fox News. Fox News is certified gospel. I'm going, really?
Well, the Rush man, if you remember, I mean, he was doing his shtick nationally already in the early 90s.
I'm 99.7653% right all the time. Yet there are more 4 acres of forest here than when Columbus came to America.
What does he say? What's his famous line? Knowledge on loan from God.
Yeah.
Well. But you got it. I know you.
But his Viagra has to come from a maid going down on the street,
you know,
corner.
From a strictly professional standpoint, I mean, you've expressed your admiration for the guy.
I think he's a fantastic entertainer.
He's an entertainer, which is what he is. I mean, he's taken as this, quote, political, unquote, expert, but he really is, at the end of the day, an entertainer.
I don't think anybody turns a phrase quite as well.
He frames his message great.
And he's
really
got some of the best writers in the country. And you know, hey, when you make $50 million a year, you can hire good people to make stuff up for you. And that's basically what it is. It's a lot of made-up stuff. And they're good at it. and their minions and the people who buy into it and sit and listen with their jaw open and their head bobbing going, uh-huh, yeah, I got it, yes, sir.
Well, it was almost like hero worship. Uh-huh. They had rush rooms. I mean, that sounds like a shrine. You can't sit in my rush room.
Well, going back to the drug thing, when I was a kid, they used to get that rush deodorant. It was some kind of rush stuff, and it would make the huffers, high as a kite. And that's what I always thought it was, a bunch of people sitting around.
The phrase, high off there. The phrase you talk about, spin, mega dittos. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, really, it's like, oh, hail, great one.
I've said that for the longest time.
Oh, great one.
It's, I'm not smart enough. I'm not worthy. But look, at the end of this, it's got to come down to people have to think rationally, and they have to look to other sources. I remember when Rush first came out, and a couple guys I used to work with, they would listen on the way to work, and we would have these heated arguments at work. And they it was amazing because everybody you talked to, they were all on the same page. It's like they all got their marching orders for the day. And I don't know anybody on the left who does that. I don't know anybody in the middle. I don't know any rational people who do that, who take someone's message and they march with that message. Most people I know, myself included, if I listen to somebody's argument, hey, that's a pretty good argument. But I don't go and regurgitate it, verb, adjective, subject,
Well, don't we? I mean, the right talks about freedom, but really the people on the left are more for freedom and more for individuality. I mean, it was once said, trying to get Democrats together is like herding cats. I think you can say somewhat of the progressive movement's a little bit like that. We don't think and act as one mindset.
We're not a homogenous party, and I've always said that the Republicans were. Now, and this is a big now. Now what you're seeing is the crazy part of the homogenous party coming to the top. You're seeing the lunacy come out. Where they were able in the past to keep that quelled, to keep the crazy people on a leash and say, well, if you don't do what we say, we're gonna unleash crazy. And it was enough of a threat. Well, crazy, they've got money now.
Well, years ago, I think it was a little more subtle than that. Years ago, these people would only think about it. Now they're actually expressing it, and it's becoming a platform of their movement.
Yeah, they'd whisper to each other, unemployment's unconstitutional. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, me too. How about minimum wage? Yeah, unconstitutional. Now they're screaming from the highest mount. And when we come back, let's talk about some of the T-twizzlers and some of the craziness that's coming out. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Stick around.
Controversial, thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. SEIU and a coalition of community groups is calling for a national freeze on home foreclosures. Several big banks, including Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase, have suspended foreclosures temporarily due to illegal and sloppy documentation. In some cases, the banks are unable to legally prove they own the homes that they're busy taking away from working families. SEIU wants a freeze on foreclosures and for Wall Street to refocus their efforts to help keep families in their homes by agreeing to principal write-downs and mortgage modifications. The recent FBI raids on peacetivists, union members, and university employees in Chicago and Minnesota's Twin Cities are efforts to intimidate activists. That's according to Chicago attorney Melinda Power.
Government cannot have the right to stop people from exercising their First Amendment rights to express their public opposition to what the government is doing here in the United States, in Afghanistan, or anywhere in the world. The government is saying, you cannot say we don't like what the government is doing. We are here because we think, yes, people have a right to publicly object, to demonstrate, to march, to voice our opposition to the policies of the government.
The September 24th raids included 20 FBI agents barging into the Chicago home of SEIU Local 73 union steward Joe Eisobaker. The FBI stayed for 12 hours, searching through everything in the home and taking away a host of personal items.
We denounce the FBI raids. These raids, searches, and grand jury investigations are nothing more than an attempt to intimidate us and to intimidate the anti-war movement. We have done nothing wrong. We're being targeted because we oppose the criminal wars and occupations launched by our government in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The FBI targeted anti-war activists, Arab American activists, and activists against U.S. military aid to Colombia. The government claims it's part of an anti-terrorist investigation. The activists maintain their actions are peaceful and lawful exercises of their constitutional rights. In New York City over the weekend, more than 80 congregations throughout the city called for the city council to pass the Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act. Living Wage Weekend was part of a larger sustained push to raise wages for working people in New York. Clergy sermonized on the morality of economic justice for working people as they urged passage of the measure over the weekend. The Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act requires wages of at least $10 an hour, indexed to inflation, in large development projects that get public subsidies. This newscast made possible in part thanks to underwriting from the OPEIU, Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Fancy cookies and little doilies on the plate. Pinkies up with our tea. Oh, won't it be great? Which is why I'm really looking forward to November 2nd. It could be that we're going to have a good government that's, you know, our government's actually going to be functional and full of qualified people, or it's going to be an exciting circus of insanity and bizarre people. And I wanted to go through some of the bizarre people, starting with Christine O'Donnell. We've talked about her once or twice, I guess. Well, maybe once or twice. Maybe once. She's as you know, the senatorial candidate from Delaware who confessed to dabbling in witchcraft, and she decided not to become a Hare Krishna. You know, not because she didn't want to shave her head, but because she didn't want to give up meatballs, which I think is kind of interesting coming from somebody who wants to do away with sex. Anyway, I'm sure there's something there. She's also someone who has secret information. She's burdened with the secret information of the Chinese government plotting to take over the U.S. She's also got information that they're cloning mice and human beings so that mice will have fully functional human brains. I would love to see that. I think I would. I would love to see a little mouse with a massive head. I think that would be funny. Also, she believes that masturbation is adultery, which I guess that's one way of looking at it. Anyway, she says that homosexuals engage in unhealthy lifestyles and that AIDS education is a platform for the homosexual community to recruit adolescents. I mean, is this woman paranoid or what? She lied about her student loan program. She lied about the president's student loan program and her opposition to abortion in even the most heinous situations. Repeatedly over her life, she's exaggerated about her education. She went to Oxford and Princeton and Claremont Graduate University. And I'm going, Claremont Graduate University? Who in their right mind would lie about some place called Claremont Graduate University? I've never heard of it. Oxford, I get. Princeton, absolutely. But Claremont Graduate University? That's like saying, I graduated from Bob's Technical College. I'm Billy Joe Bob's Tow Truck School. I mean, come on, honey. Let's not forget the fact that she's never had a job. She's had all this education, Oxford, Princeton, Claremont, graduate university, who has never heard of her, by the way. But she went there. Maybe she went to the bathroom there once. So like she said, she went there. Where's my hi-hat? But she's never had a job. She defaulted on her mortgage in good times. And how she got a mortgage without a job is another whole discussion that we should be having about our mortgage crisis. How someone like her, never having a job, got a mortgage. I mean, really, Tea Party people, stop and think about this for a second. You're complaining that the banking industry is out of hand with irresponsible people. Hello? Do that for me. Do the hello.
Hello?
No, that's not how you do it. Get out of here. Every other time you got that hello you do, and that wasn't it. But anyway, she defaults on her mortgage, never had a job, got a mortgage. I'm trying to figure that one out. And allegedly she used campaign funds to pay for her rent. So how she ended up with, I don't know, $5,800 worth of income in a year, giving herself $2,700 or a bunch of money to her campaign, I'm not sure how you live. And the reality is she's really the perfect blend of ignorance and delusion. And I hope she wins. I do. I think she will be a breath of fresh air in the Senate.
No, I can't impose that on the people of America. You know, she's been in the spotlight now for the last couple months. And they cover her campaign. I haven't heard her once, not once, talk articulately about any of the real issues of the times. Not once.
Well, I think she would be great. I do. I love her. I think this would be just the greatest thing in the whole world. You know? And from the great state of Tennessee, or the great state of Delaware, Christine O'Donnell.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Yeah, baby. What is your proposition, Senator from Delaware?
Stop the things you do.
Okay, baby, I'll stop it right now.
What's up? I lied.
Well, you lied about your education. You gotta love it, though. You really gotta love the whole craziness, though. And let's move on to another crazy conservative, Wisconsin Republican U.S. Senate candidate Ron Johnson. Remember, Ron Johnson's the guy who uses prison labor so he doesn't have to pay his employee health care or even a reasonable wage. So right from the start, good American business person, I think, figuring out how to stick it to his worker. So maybe that's a reason to vote for him. Here's another guy wants to call Social Security a Ponzi scheme, claims climate change are just sunspots, wants to dismantle Social Security and Medicare. That would be a good starting point in his estimation. And he's open to abolishing the Federal Reserve. He testified against a state child abuse protection bill in January. So, hey, let's beat those kids and do those things. Yeah, good Republican family value. He is so far off the reservation that the Tea Party has disaffiliated themselves with him, saying that they were unimpressed with his knowledge of the Constitution. And here's the thing. When the Tea Party calls you ignorant, that is really saying something. I mean, really, come on now. When the Tea Party is telling you, you ain't got it. Let's move over to Nevada. Sharon Engel, the Republican senatorial candidate, she was for privatizing the VA until her poll numbers sank, and then she remembered she was for it before she was against it. She wants to get rid of Social Security. Unemployment benefits are welfare. Like most T-twits, she appears truly delusional, saying that Muslim law is taking a hold of American cities and that there are domestic enemies in Congress. And she's claimed that Harry Reid wants to give child molesters Viagra. And for all you Raiders fans out there and Steelers fans, she has campaigned against the color black. So no black football jerseys, according to her, because that's the color of evil. So, you know, there's a segment of the population we can be focusing on. She's also made fun of health care coverage for autism, using air quotes to describe the condition. Autism. Somebody really needs to smack that woman. She said she would have voted against federal aids for the people affected by Hurricane Katrina. Another good, you know, good solid T-twizzler. Even though every person in the Senate voted unanimously in favor of helping the people there. Not to mention she's so far off the reservation that the head of the Nevada Republican Party, Bill Reggio, a guy who has spent 38 years in the state Senate, endorsed her opponent, Harry Reid. Stop and think about what that means. When the Republican in the state of Nevada says, Harry's my guy, and has never once in his entire life supported a Democrat, you know there's something wrong with your candidate. She's against government health care, even though she gets it. She's against Social Security, even though her husband gets a federal pension. Again, the glaring hypocrisy.
And she's also said that, you know, we just coddle the workers in this country. We just have too many government programs for these people.
Oh, they're just too much.
We've just made life too easy for them.
Those children, they eat.
And those people actually want paid when they don't have a job. Can you imagine?
They
want money so they can take care of their families.
How dare they? We need to go back to the good old days.
Let them eat cake.
Let's go to Kentucky. The U.S. Senate race there in Kentucky. Rand Paul criticized the Civil Rights Act of 64. That rang, you know, dog whistle politic into the ears of the racists, so they were happy with that. Good one for you. Wants to eliminate the Department of Education because really what we need is a bunch of stupid people walking around in circles. That would be a good thing. He says Medicare is intergenerational welfare. So remember that, Grandma. Add that to the fact that he wants a $2,000 deductible. You know, intergenerational welfare. So all those years you worked and paid into the system and with the promise that would be there when you get older, Rand here wants to give you the old Husker Du there out the door and be done with you. He also says it seems like protecting minors is not on the top of his list. He accused President Obama of, quote, forcing the EPA down our throats after miners died in the coal mines. So heaven forbid that we, you know, protect workers. You know, heaven forbid that, you know, miners go home in the same condition they showed up in, alive, you know. He wants the Bush tax cuts extended because we shouldn't punish the rich. And he, let's not forget, while in college, you know, a good college prankster he was, oh, that rascal, could have been on Animal House, could have been in the Animal House, could have been with Blutovsky. Although I don't even think Animal House did this. He blindfolded some girl he knew, tied her up, made her smoke pot, and made her worship the Aqua Buddha, whatever the heck that is. And this is a guy we want along with the witch and the crazy woman in the Senate. And it gets better. It gets much better. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the guy from Alaska, which is just gold. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
What the hell are we doing in Afghanistan, you ask? According to Washington's war hawks, we're there to win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people. Key to this strategy, we're told, is to establish the legitimacy of the central government, led by the famously incompetent, vain, arrogant, aloof, and corrupt president, Hamid Karzai. And how's that going? Well, at least they pulled off a national parliamentary election in September.
He was meant to show democratic progress, thus bolstering the stability and credibility of the government. Unfortunately, there were some unpleasant incidents during the balloting. Beaucoup unpleasantness. More than 3,000 cases of gross electioneering fraud have poured into the Election Complaints Commission, with nearly 60% of them considered serious enough to have affected the outcome. How gross, you ask? In Kandahar province, where the president's brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, rules as an autocratic strongman, some 50 parliamentary seats were being contested. Amazingly, the list of winners were all from Karzai's political faction. And, get this, Ahmed Wali had the list of winners in his hands before the election. In a third of the provinces, the fraud was blatant and widespread. A cell phone video, for example, caught officials in one district polling place haggling with a candidate over the price of buying votes. In another district, local police handcuffed and removed three groups of election workers from their polling places, then presented the, quote, results for them to sign at the end of the day. In a northern province, gunmen slapped, dragged, and otherwise coerced people to go to polling places and vote for the gunman's candidate. This is Jim Hychar saying, this so-called election shows that there's nothing legitimate about Karzai's government, and nothing legitimate about America's involvement in Afghanistan. It's time to get out of there.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
The Aqua Buddha. Yeah, get me high, baby. Take me to the river. And just like Rand Paul, take me down to the river, tie me up, make me smoke dope, and worship the river. And you know what's amazing to me is that kind of kookiness just never really caught anybody's attention. The fact that he abducted this girl, tied her up, made her smoke dope, and then drove her down to the river and made her worship the river. I mean, to me, that just seems... You know, I understand college pranks, and I'm okay with that. But I do believe that that should preclude you from being a U.S. senator. I'm sorry. Making some poor girl worship water. I don't know. I mean, from a guy who, you know, for all intent and purposes, seems to want to pollute as much water as possible by allowing corporations the ability to do whatever the hell they want. Seems pretty rational to me, right? There he is doing his eye-rolling thing again. Jeez. But let's go over to Alaska, north to Alaska. Joe Miller, the Republican for Senate. Unemployment is unconstitutional, according to Joe, but that didn't stop his wife from collecting it. No. Minimum wage is unconstitutional. Hate crime laws, unconstitutional. Health care reform legislation, unconstitutional. His family receiving health care benefits. That's okay. That's okay. Receiving those benefits from the state, from Medicaid, no worries. But doesn't that kind of fly in the face of the whole health care reform unconstitutional thing? Maybe. Other T-Twizzler thing, wants to shut down the Department of Education. Again, very happy with ignorance and stupidity. Wants to dump Social Security. He doesn't believe in man-made global warming. He's anti-choice, again, even in cases of rape and incest. And like a good fiscally conservative Republican, he's got a credit card debt somewhere between $35,000 and $80,000. And this is a guy we want to put in Congress. This is somebody who we say, yes, I want you to have the purse. Here's the purse with all the money in it. Go, I bequeath you, my responsible young lad. you and your $35,000 to $80,000 credit card debt.
Not a lot.
Well, you know, it is Alaska, I guess. Ken Buck, the Republican candidate for Senate in Colorado, he's flip-flopped on his repealing of the 17th Amendment. See, he originally wanted to repeal the 17th Amendment, and then he read it. And then he decided, well, gee, if I want people to vote for me, maybe I should be in favor of the 17th Amendment so that they'll vote for me. Because, you know, the establishment, not so fond of him. He's an abortion zealot who claims he would refuse to vote for pro-choice judges. If you remember, first he was in favor of privatizing Social Security and Medicare, because they're unconstitutional, of course. But then, you know, again, while he was reading the 17th Amendment, you know, wanting people to vote for him, maybe he realized that Medicare and Social Security weren't unconstitutional, and he has flipped back. So I'm waiting for the flop. There was the flip, now the flop. Like the good Christian conservative that he is, and we've talked about these people for a while, he wants to ban IUDs and all birth control pills. No more family planning. Women should be at the mercy of the man's. Johnson, you are mine. Do as I say. He, too, wants to shut down the Department of Education. He supports a consumption tax to replace the income tax. And I got to be honest, his only real enduring quality, that's basically it. And that was his voting pitch. Vote for me because I don't wear women's shoes. Again, you know, kind of like the Christine O'Donnell thing. If you're saying, I'm not a witch, yeah, that's kind of right there with vote for me because I don't wear women's shoes. I mean, if that's the best you got, you know, maybe there's some substance missing. Maybe there's some posse missing. You know, maybe there's something there that's not right.
I guess my question is, maybe you can tell me, what kind of a chance does man have?
Last time I checked, he was dead heat
with
Michael
right?
Bennett out there.
Isn't that scary?
It's scary. Look at this guy who's running for governor in New York. This guy's just plain nuts, this Carl Paladino. He threatened the editors at the New York Post. I mean, the Post. Who would threaten the editors at the Post? There's nothing there. He's in a habit of sending offensive racist emails. I mean, as O'Donnell and Engel. I mean, really, he's almost there. Your typical homophobic basher. He said, quote, to be brainwashed into thinking that homosexuality is a equally valid or successful option. An option? When did that become an option? I think it's how you're born. Maybe if Mr. Paladino can choose to go both ways, that's his. And you know what? I'm all in favor of him having that ability, to, as long as he does it in the confines of his walls, with a consult, and I don't have to know about it. But he's another billionaire, another one of these rich guys who are trying to buy his way into elected positions. He has spent about almost $4 million of his own money. And this is the best part. Like Christine O'Donnell, $2 million of it has gone to his companies. So he's basically spending campaign money, enriching himself. So good for you. I kind of think it's funny. Remember, the first I heard about him, he had talked about forcing welfare recipients into prison camps because they need to be taught personal hygiene. You know, and like I say, so much for getting government out of our lives. He wants to send children in failing schools to state boarding schools. So that's another good one. Rip them right out of the home, send them off. And here's my favorite Republican trick. You're going to love this. Good Christian values, good conservative family values, nuclear family. Home, wife, you know, that whole thing, commitment, love, and undance, you know, runs through the veins of Mr. Paladino. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong guy. Sorry. He's the guy who had a kid while he was married. Didn't even bother telling his wife about the kid for many years. Yet he's out there bashing his opponent, accusing his opponent of marital infidelity. I seem to remember something about a pot kettle. There's a color. Oh, yeah, it was black. And the good thing is Sharon Engel campaign against see, this is how the party does it. You know, you call the pot and the kettle black. Sharon Engel runs against it. The black pot is evil. I get this. I think I understand T-Bonics. I'm starting to get it. I mean, it's just nuts. just nuts. Dan Mace, he's running for governor of Colorado. So you got New York, who's got a crazy guy running, and Colorado can't be far behind. He hates bicycles. And he wants you to know that the city of Denver, who his opponent was mayor of, is converting the city into a United Nations community by encouraging our cities, their citizens to ride bikes. How dare make their want their citizens to ride bike park? Communist plot. Can you say nuts? And then there's Lincoln, Connecticut. She's running for Senate for Chris Dodd's seat. Linda McMahon, who thinks it's okay for women to bark like dogs. And to be honest, I think I'm kind of with her on that one. I think it's kind of hot. But, you know, the whole family value thing. Have you really watched World Championship Wrestling? Have you watched the WWE, of which she was the former CEO of? Okay, you know.
It's entertainment.
Okay. Another one didn't know anything about the minimum wage. Another one who is not in favor of labor law reform. Another one who says, you know, hey, you know what? I believe in independent contractors. So when the independent contractor comes up with FedEx, man's going to man. Where do you think she's going to be? She's going to be on the side of FedEx because her entire business model is built on independent contractors, much like FedEx's. And, you know, where will she be on trade? Well, where do you think most of the WWE toys come from? They come from China and Pakistan. Again, you know, if you talk, at least walk the talk. You know, if you're going to be someone that I want to vote for, I got to tell you, there's some questions here. And then there's Marco Rubio. You got to love Marco Rubio, the Republican candidate for Senate in Florida. He is the T-Twizzler delight, man. He's the guy. He signed a pledge supporting the privatization of Social Security, calling it generational theft. Are you getting this, Granny? You know, those people you're out there supporting, get gov out of my health care. Keep my medicine. Oh, wait a minute, government plan. These want to do away with what you're benefiting from. He wants to end the Bush tax cuts. Well, you know, he's flip-flopped on the immigration bill. He supports it now, even though, you know, he wasn't. And he was even backing deporting children who've grown up here in the U.S.
And by the way, he will be the
he's going to win.
He's up big.
Oh, he's up big.
If I can go back to his position in Social Security, you realize Florida has the largest number of retirees by far. So he's basically telling a good part of his constituents, you know, he don't particularly care if they like Social Security and depend on it. He wants to basically privatize it and, for all intents and purposes, destroy the system.
And, you know, I get this. Well, you know, Rick, why bother going through all that? Look, if you don't know what your opponents are up to, if you don't know what these guys, you know, I agree with some of the teabag positions. I'm an angry guy myself. I feel like I've been taxed enough as well. But, folks, you have no idea what the possible we just talked about end up in political office. You have no idea the amount of pain and suffering that's coming. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard. It wasn't always this way. The original America way was from sun up to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sun up to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and eat at will grew left. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested against paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago, in 8th, was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square's bomb and the blazing guns of Company Pay Police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men and children shed blood, flesh, in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we just show labor history was made possible by from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.com.
Hello, I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 5,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are. Not for the recognition, but for more information, please visit AFSCME 13 words. It's changing the labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
What's going on?
I'll tell you, it's not going to be the Republicans and the handful of Bettany Democrats who have held up the health care bill, who shrunk the stimulus. It should have been much bigger. Should have absolutely been much bigger. I got an email during the break from Michael, and I think the whole marijuana issue is not my issue. I'll be honest with you, it's really not. But we are going to get somebody in the next couple of days who it is their issue. We're going to try and get, I think Michael Whitney would be a good guy to get for this, if we can, over the next couple of days to talk about it, since it is their issue over at Fire Dog Lake, or one of them. So I think that'd be a good thing to do. Get somebody who knows more than I do, because I got to be honest with you. You could lay it on my desk in front of me, and I wouldn't know what it is. Just that kind of.
And in the world you grew up with, that I was amazed at that, right?
Yeah, going back to the story that I told you, you know, when I saw that guy, that really was a thing that stuck in my head. And, you know, knowing my personality, you know, when I drank, when I was playing in a band, I used to drink. And I would drink an entire fifth of Tanqueray on gig nights. And I was functional drinking an entire fifth of Tanqueray.
Although there were some times you were led astray.
Yeah, well, occasionally. but there were a whole bunch of times I wish I didn't remember, and there were times I don't remember. But even still, it's one of those things. It's my personality. I have an addictive personality. I know that. And I think had I gotten into smoking pot, I would have been the best pot smoker ever. And I would have never gotten anything done. But, you know, that's just – so it's not my issue is kind of where I want to leave it. But we will find somebody who it is their issue so we can have that conversation. Because I do believe it is an issue that has to be addressed in this country. Because we can't afford to keep locking people up. And it would be a nice stream of revenue if we could tax it. Now, what model it would take, how we would go about it, I have no clue. That's why we need to find somebody who knows, who has an idea of what the future would look like. Anyway, Republicans have no problem supporting privatizers, tenthers, 17thers, tea partiers, an ex-witch, you know, but a Nazi reenactor, a little bit over the top.
Mm.
you know, Rich Ayotte, Ohio Republican. He used to play dress-up Nazi games. He would dress up in his Nazi clothes, and he would run around in the woods with his other SS impersonators, and they would... Originally, it was purely because of historical things, because he just loved history so much that he wanted to put on an SS uniform and run around in the woods there in Ohio. But then, you know, people said, that's a little crazy. So he said, well, you know what it was, is I just wanted to bond with my son. I wanted my son to have the good heritage. That's good. Got to have heritage. Put on German boots and hat. Hi-ya. So it was a good bonding moment for the young man. And as I asked, whatever happened to, I don't know, going to a ball game? Whatever happened to, you know, throwing a little frisbee around in the park? You know, I'd want to bond with my kids, too. I don't know that I would dress up in a Nazi uniform. Wouldn't have been my first thought. Just wouldn't have been.
Not very smart politically. I mean, if you were a veteran in World War II or even worse, one of your family members was killed in the war, how do you think you react to this nutcase? I mean, really, where's your perspective, especially if you want to be a public servant?
See, there's a thin line.
Wow.
There's a thin line between acceptable crazy and unacceptable crazy. There's a thin line with these Republicans, and I haven't figured it out yet. You know, and maybe it's just the way you're going with it. You know, I think back to some of the people that the conservative movement has embraced, you know, because they were sinners and now they're found, you know, like George Bush, you know, I was a sinner and then I found Jesus. And now all these crazy people like him. You know, Jimmy Swaggart, the guy with the prostitute who said that, you know, she never really had sex with him, but that he was twisted. One of the most twisted people she'd ever met. And I go, you know, when a hooker says you're twisted, you're pretty freaking twisted. At least I think so. But then there's Ted Haggard. You know, a guy who, you know, you would think that they would forgive, you know, but I guess sniffing crack off the backside of a male hooker is not something that the right easily forgives. Maybe there's hope. I don't know. Maybe. But there seems to be a general theme that runs through this. There seems to be an undercurrent that runs through the conservative movement, through the T-Twizzler movement. And, like, eliminating Medicare is one of them. Or severely hampering it. You go back to Rand Paul saying what we need is $2,000 deductible and it's generational welfare. Should we? Let me throw it out to you. You're a couple days away from Medicare. What would you say to a voucher program? Let's get you a voucher. You can go out there. You can buy health care on the open market. I think it's a good American free enterprise thing to do.
No. I think the concept of Medicare is sound. It's going to have to be adjusted from time to time. It's going to have to be funded properly, which it hasn't been. But when you start getting into vouchers and you start to getting into the edges of privatization, you're really getting away from the basic concept.
Well, the basic concept is you're stealing from my children, you old guy, you.
At the end of the day, it has to be a priority. This is, once again, one of these decisions that we're going to have to make as a nation. And the sad part about the healthcare debate is we didn't say no, but did we really say yes, Rick? We kind of had, at least emanating out of, I think the American people, if you look at numbers, aside from the right-wing candidates who would like to tell you that most Americans oppose it, and what they conveniently don't tell you, a good part of those people opposed what came out of Congress because it wasn't good enough. So their concept that many of the Americans don't want health care reform, I think, is nonsense. I think the American people have arrived at the time, and there's the deep disappointment in the left, Rick. We thought with this president and the Democratic Party in control of the Senate and the House and the will of the people was pushing this country toward something very close to national health care, that this time we were going to get it. And I think that's the great disappointment. At the end of the day, what was the great equalizer? Money.
Yep. So the question I guess I have for people is, do you think Medicare is unconstitutional? as the Millers and the Pauls and all of these on the right seem to believe. And there's a small segment of people who believe that it's unconstitutional to take their money and give it to those old people or those poor people or those people or whatever group that you want to talk about. It's my money and I shouldn't have to share with anyone. Is that the kind of nation we want to live in? I don't think so. And I don't think Medicare is unconstitutional, and it shouldn't be. We need to be, it goes back to something I'd heard a while ago. You judge a society how they treat their most vulnerable, how you treat your children, how you treat your senior citizens. That to me, really, honestly and truthfully, is a very true statement. And what bothers me is you look at these folks that we've been talking about here tonight. If this country were a homogenous society, like Germany was, I could very easily see us heading down the wrong path. If we were a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant nation, I could easily see us heading down the wrong track because they've identified the others. It's all of them who are, and you go to these Tea Party rallies. That's really what it's about. You don't see many black faces or Hispanic faces. You don't see any of that stuff. You see a bunch of angry old white people. Well,
historically, Rick, the right has become strong when economic times are bad because it's that woman of color over there. She's responsible.
Welfare queen.
She's responsible for my economic woes or the welfare programs or the minorities or those coming across the border. They're responsible for me not having a job.
Not the fact that the multinational corporation took all those jobs overseas years ago. Not the fact that we've been engaging in this bizarre neoliberal trade policy nonce for 30-some years now. No, never mind that. It's that person, that defenseless minority behind us. It's that person in poverty behind us. That's who we blame. Not the corporation who pulls up stakes, moves to China, and we end up paying them to move. No, it wasn't. No. That's not that.
And the good one, they always pull it out there. You know what? I love this one. Wow, that welfare mother down the street. She every other year she has another kid because she gets a lot more money. Well, we've discussed this before.
It's a fallacy.
Absolutely. I mean, the amount of money she gets for an extra child. But if she's doing it, let me put it this way. If she's doing it because she thinks she's ahead of the game.
But TANF has a time limit.
She's not using the brains that God gave
TANF
her.
TANF has a time limit. And this stuff, well, they're on it for life. You know, it's their retirement. No, it's not. Stop that. Stop it already.
Conservatives don't want to hear the fact. The truth is that most people in welfare are there 2 years or less, which is exactly what it was intended to do. It was intended to give a helping hand up at a time when they needed it so that, so they can move up and maybe enhance the quality of life and get a good job and get a good education and move on from there.
I love the people who say, well, I know so-and-so who's cheating. They're cheating the system. And I grab my phone and go, okay, well, let's go find them. I'll call the police and we'll meet over at their house. If they're cheating the system, let's go get them. Let's go lock them up. Oh, I don't want to do that. Well, then what are you complaining about? Or are you lying? Or don't you know? And chance, nine times out of ten, they don't know. They just pulled it out of the place where most Republicans get their facts. Reached behind them and popped right out of the keister. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
We
keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
I'll tell you, my favorite part of that song is when he goes, "Ooga." During the breakup, my engineer sent me this story. It's funny on its face. It's absolutely hysterical on its face. Yet in reality, this is the kind of, not this, but these are the kind of situations that people get into in the workplace. And for the most part, when you get into a situation you're uncomfortable with, like this guy is, you have no real recourse. And it starts off, what do you say to a lawyer, to a naked lawyer? Here's a suit, I guess. From the boingboing.net website. I don't care if you're my boss. I refuse to attend your naked lawyer vision quest marital aid party. Attorney Stephen Engelston is suing his employer, saying the top partner at the law firm pressured him to participate in a weekend all-male retreat that amounted to a new age self-discovery male bonding sausage fest and a naked lawyer male rubber male guy thingy there party. You know what I'm talking about. The whole, you know, the little things, the rubber things. Depending on your point of view, participants were sworn to secrecy, says Engelston. And that was the first sign of something hinky, he said. The article, The New Warrior Training Adventure, here's a snip from AOL News. And I'll read the AOL News story. Men would be holding hands, walking naked, blindfolded through a forest. Then they would sit nude in groups of 30 to 50, passing around a wooden, I still don't know, I can say that. marital aid, a wooden male genital thing. There you go. And giving lurid details of their sexual history. Eggleston said he found out that the men will grab each other's genitals if they wish. Eggleston didn't like what he read and refused the invitation. Now he's suing the firm and his bosses, saying he was badgered, yelled at, and ultimately had his pay slashed to zero for not attending the retreat, which was held at a Santa Barbara, California mountain campground and sponsored by the Mankind Project, according to a lawsuit filed in Orange County Superior Court. Angleton said in the complaint that he was contacted several times by Mankind Project officials who tried to convince him to attend the party. Part of his research revealed that attendees were told to carpool so that they would not be able to leave the events once they got there. Organizer Marshall Krupp said the men were told to carpool in groups for their safety. He also confirmed the nude walks and sit-downs with the male rubber thing. What would you do if your boss said, hey, Jake, bring your shiny head over here and hold this thing?
I think I'd have a problem with that.
I think a good number of employees would. I think I would, too. In fact, what I would probably do is I would probably take the wooden, what's a good word for that? I don't know if I can say the D word. The wooden marital aid, and I'd bash him on the head with it. What if you get fired for that? Because chances are you got fired for not going, which brings us back to at-will employment. You are at the mercy of your employer. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What, you don't like the marital aid story?
That's a bit strange, to say the least.
It was extremely strange. And it's not something you'll hear on other radio programs, just right here at the Rick Smith Show. Anyway, getting back to our friends on the extreme right, they want to privatize Social Security. We've heard countless Republican lawmakers and candidates saying, you know what, let's privatize Social Security so we can get that money into Wall Street, like our guy here, Toomey. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, he doesn't want to privatize it. He just wants individual accounts. Wait a minute. Isn't that privatizing it?
Well, I think for the people that are listening tonight, you need to kind of know the history of privatization of Social Security in this state. About 4 years ago, an ex-senator, thank God, by the name of Rick Santorum, actually, for a period of about, I would say a good 6 months, Rick, toured the state touting his program to basically privatize Social Security. Went all over the state. And what was really positive to see, he tried to split the generations. He tried to say to the young people, it's not going to be there when you're here. We need to do this. Think of the money you could make. And, you know, there were large amounts of young people and college students. They were actually organized. They came to these meetings, these town hall meetings, and they just blasted his proposals. I mean, they blew him out of the water. Eventually, he just stopped. And that was one of the kingpins of his reelection in 2006, and Bob Casey just killed him. If I remember, by 17 points, which even a month out, I would have said, if you would have told me Bob Casey's going to win by 17, I would have said, you know, what are you smoking?
Yeah, but we are at a different time, my friend.
I know. My point is this. Now you got Toomey. He's not going to say, well, I want to privatize. He actually, that's his proposition, but he's couching it and saying, well, we're not really privatizing, but we want personal accounts, and we want young people coming along, not the people that have it now, not the people who already retire, but the young people to have their choice. Well, if you do that, it's the proverbial first camel's nose under the tent. It's the first step, and you can't.
How does that go? I've never heard that. The proverbial first camel's nose. What is that?
The point is this: once you start it, you start that process, and eventually, you're gonna destroy it, and we can't allow that. But it's the same proposition. Okay. You want to allow them to invest in the market. Simple. And of course, Mr. Toomey, who voted with Wall Street when he was in Congress and worked for him, is, you know, he's gonna be, and has in the past, an agent of Wall Street. Always will be.
Yeah. But, you know, some of the things that bothers me about this, if we're going to start talking about privatizing Social Security, is who are going to be the winners and the losers? And we know who the winners are going to be. The winners are going to be people who are going to be able to take administrative fees, the people who are going to be able to take trading fees, and, the people who are going to be able to, just take their little bites, take the VIG right off the top, if you will, the morbido, the little bite. Just take that little bit off, and then it's going to get bigger, and it's going to get bigger. And before you know it, the pot's going to dwindle because you're going to have all these greedy hands who, it's never enough. Wall Street's greed is never enough. And one of the things that I found interesting about 60 Minutes last night that I didn't get to is they were talking about Wall Street and these supercomputers that are making these trades. It's not about human beings anymore. It's a computer game now. And there's really, honestly and truthfully, my worldview about Wall Street just really was solidified by watching this. It's a gambling casino. And the person with the most inside information, the person with the fastest computer, they're the ones who win the game.
And I saw that same thing, and they're literally saying, look, this technology can compute hundreds of thousands of trades per second.
Yep.
Per second. It's just amazing.
And you go, how is that investing in a company? How is that helping the company? All you're doing is buying and rebuying and rebuying and rebuying the same stock that the company already had the money for. I mean, it's just a virtual thing, if anything else.
And from what I gathered out of it, the very process itself, the technology is really, to some degree, dictating which way the market goes. And that's scary.
Well, back in May, they were talking about the crash that happened because the computer went haywire. Nothing happened. The computer just shut down, and it started dumping everything. There was a huge sell-off, and they had this collapse.
Mm.
Scary stuff. So when we're talking about taking our Social Security money and putting it into basically just dumping it on the craps table and hoping and praying that the thieves and the marauders don't take it all. I mean, look at our 401ks. Do you really want to do that? Do you really want to put the one thing that has saved senior citizens in this country from poverty in this last recession? Do you really want to gamble that? Do you really want to put that on the table? I mean, do you really want to buy lottery tickets with your last buck? I mean, I don't think so. I don't think it's a great idea. I think insurance should be very secure. And the last thing, you'll be able to invest in, because you're so smart, you'll be able to invest in what you want. No, I want somebody smarter than me investing my money.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, we always assume that the people we trust with our money are going to be fair to us. I mean, let's be honest. Some of the people are going to trade. Every time they trade, they get theirs. Now, they'll get theirs. You can lose money, you can win money, you can gain money, but it doesn't matter to them. They are going to get their part of the pie just by trading.
They're going to get their VIG.
They call it churning, and some people will do that.
They're going to get their VIG. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. We're right back.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. SEIU and a coalition of community groups is calling for a national freeze on home foreclosures. Several big banks, including Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase, have suspended foreclosures temporarily due to illegal and sloppy documentation. In some cases, the banks are unable to legally prove they own the homes that they're busy taking away from working families. SEIU wants a freeze on foreclosures and for Wall Street to refocus their efforts to help keep families in their homes by agreeing to principal write-downs and mortgage modifications. The recent FBI raids on peace activists, union members, and university employees in Chicago and Minnesota's Twin Cities are efforts to intimidate activists. That's according to Chicago attorney Melinda Power.
Government cannot have the right to stop people from exercising their First Amendment rights to express their public opposition to what the government is doing here in the United States, in Afghanistan, or anywhere in the world. The government is saying you cannot say we don't like what the government is doing. We are here because we think, yes, people have a right to publicly object, to demonstrate, to march, to voice our oppositions to the policies of the government.
The September 24th raids included 20 FBI agents barging into the Chicago home of SEIU Local 73 union steward Joe Eisobaker. The FBI stayed for 12 hours, searching through everything in the home and taking away a host of personal items.
We denounce the FBI raids. These raids, searches, and grand jury investigations are nothing more than an attempt to intimidate us and to intimidate the anti-war movement. We have done nothing wrong. We're being targeted because we oppose the criminal wars and occupations launched by our government in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The FBI targeted anti-war activists, Arab American activists, and activists against U.S. military aid to Colombia. The government claims it's part of an anti-terrorist investigation. The activists maintain their actions are peaceful and lawful exercises of their constitutional rights. In New York City over the weekend, more than 80 congregations throughout the city called for the city council to pass the Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act. Living Wage Weekend was part of a larger, sustained push to raise wages for working people in New York. Clergy sermonized on the morality of economic justice for working people as they urged passage of the measure over the weekend. The Fair Wages for New Yorkers Act requires wages of at least $10 an hour, indexed to inflation, in large development projects that get public subsidies. This newscast made possible in part thanks to underwriting from the OPEIU, Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
Last night was the big Undercover Boss program that Jake didn't watch. He was supposed to, because if you're going to come prepared for the program, you come prepared and you watch Undercover Boss.
There was something of national security on TV I watched.
Yeah, some dumb baseball game.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, Undercover Boss was on, and they had the CEO of DirecTV on. And to be honest, this was probably the most likable CEO that I think they've ever had. When I saw him jumping up and down on the in the dumpster on the cardboard, I'm going, man, what would happen if, something slipped out and he ended up doing a backflip off the end and landing right on his head? As a CEO of a company, wouldn't you go, that's kind of unsafe. You shouldn't do that. See, that's what I would have said, but that's just me. The program went off as like normal. You gotta identify with the CEO, and you've gotta hear what makes him so sympathetic. And they did that. They went through and they said, his father was his role model. His parents passed away when he was young, and the son had an addiction problem, and all of this stuff. And let's play the clip.
I grew up in Alabama.
Yeah?
My mom and dad got divorced when I was 6 years old, so my dad was never around. So growing up, didn't have that stability. The first time I get with my friends, they offered me some beer. They offered me some reefer. Went from smoking reefer to snorting cocaine.
Ah, jeez.
And then turned to a crackhead that lived on the street for a year and a half.
My son had difficulties growing up in high school. How did you change?
Let me see. I'm drunk, been drinking all day. I run a red light. Guy hit me. And that's how I got this hole on top of my head. The car, crying. Blood pouring out my head. And the moment I looked up, there's a lady in a long white robe, long white hair. She said, "The Lord sent me here for you to tell you everything will be fine." Wow. I looked up again. She go. Tom, ever since then, I'm a youth pastor, so it's a good thing, to be there for kids, because a lot of kids go through life and don't have a father.
Yep.
I let them know I'm proud of them. I love them. And we'll go through like...
Well, that was the wrong clip. That was supposed to be his son's drug addiction, because his son had a drug addiction problem, which was interesting that they chose Phil. And you heard Phil's story. Phil had an alcohol and drug problem, got into an accident, found Jesus, and now he's, you know, he's cleaned his life up. He's, you know, he's doing well. And when we come back, when we come back to him, we'll talk about his reward. But really the whole point of this show, and we've talked about it a number of times, is they set up the premise that, hey, you know, this is a sympathetic guy. You know, granted, he's the CEO, but, you know, he's got his hardships too. Then they take him in. He tells his board of directors, oh, I'm going undercover. I'm going to slink in underneath under the stealth of night, and I'm going to be one of them. And he goes in, and he lets his beard grow out because, you know, messes up his hair, puts on some goofy glasses. And now he's one of us. He's one of those working people. And he goes through and he meets all these people. Generally four people per show. There are generally four lottery winners per show. And like this guy, Phil, you know, he tells his story. Look, you know, I had a problem. I was drinking. And amazingly, you know, the CEO had a son. His son had a drinking problem. So there's kind of a bonding there. And you got to wonder, was this just random, or did they choose Phil out of the tens of thousands of employees that DirecTV has? Kind of makes you wonder a little bit. But he goes through some of the other folks. And the next guy he meets is Ryan. And they're working in a warehouse, and Ryan is, you know, the kind of guy who's, you know, fast talking, fast walking. He's, you know, he's a good employee. Here's his
story. Ryan is a meticulous person. He's very organized. I was kind of getting the general feel of where some of the stuff was, but there's probably 40 items on the basic list, but he's got it nailed.
Yeah, I mean, heaven forbid that the working guy actually know his job, Jake. You know, and that's what I took from that. You know, he's saying, oh, he's got it nailed. Oh, I can't believe it. It's his job. And there's this almost all of these CEOs have this kind of surprise. Oh, my God, he knows what to do.
He's supposed to know what he...
But according to these folks, and it was funny watching this guy, you know, try and move some of the boxes around, and he was getting everyone wrong. Again, inept. But that's part of the shtick. That's part of the whole package. Because, you know, they're trying to, you know, say, well, you know, the workers are wonderful, and we appreciate them, even though they don't. But he goes on to talk about Ryan has some back problems, and here's Ryan talking about
it. I have a degenerative disc disease. Basically, from birth, my cartilage in my spine was deteriorating, so they had to fuse my back.
Back is tough stuff.
Four vertebrae together, and eight screws, and two titanium rods.
My wife had scoliosis, but she had her surgery in the late 50s.
Oh.
She was in a body cast.
I was out of commission for about 7 months.
Wow. And so what he got, you know, Ryan was a lottery winner, a worker lottery winner, because, you know, his story is he's got a couple of kids and he's working hard trying to support his kids. He's divorced. And so, the lottery was this.
I got a question for you. When are your twin boys' birthday?
August 21st.
Well, I want you to go and put together the most fantastic birthday party that they will never forget. Magicians, jumpy things, the entire nine yards, and I'm going to pay for it.
Oh, thank you very much.
I wish them a very happy birthday.
I appreciate that very much. You always want the best for your kids.
So his lottery win was a birthday party for his kids.
Kind of nice.
Kind of nice.
Not overly substantive, but, you know, not bad.
So Chloe was the next one, and she has an interesting story.
I have school on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
You're doing this, to pay for the tuition? Or?
I had a scholarship, but that one's already ran out.
Yeah.
I'm a political science major because when I was younger, I actually was in foster care for about over a year. And just wanted to make sure that whatever career I go into, I'm able to give back because I feel like, you know, I've come out of so much.
You know, you just love that background music, and I got to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever had anybody open up that way to me on a job site, where the first couple minutes you meet them, they're telling you their whole life story. I've just never had that.
You get the impression as the show goes on, you know, that some of this is most definitely pre-planned.
It's all set up to me. In my opinion, it's all set up. What I loved about the whole show was his flub. And here's the big flub.
Good morning. Thank you for calling DirecTV. My name is Tom.
Right.
How are you today, sir?
It's not a sir.
Oops. Screwed that one up there, Tom. But it turns out, Chloe there, she was Miss Black Colorado, beauty queen contestant. I'm going, wow. I mean, they didn't just choose her out of the heap. But she got a nice scholarship.
So going to school and you're working a full-time job.
Yeah.
That's not easy.
It's not.
I've been so inspired by you. I want to create a DirecTV scholarship program. And you're going to be the first to get a scholarship for up to $10,000 towards your schooling next year.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. For school.
For school.
Thank you so much.
Well, I thought that was nice. Out of all of these, and I don't want to get into too much, but out of all of these, this was the guy who was most likable. The program, to me, again, followed their script. They are not deviating in any way, shape, or form from their script because I think they think people have bought it and that people are not paying attention to the fact that, I've just never had anybody tell me all their worldly problems on the first 5 minutes I meet them. I just haven't had that happen or invite me to their home or any of the stuff that has happened during this program. So either they think we're complete dupes and we're never going to catch on, or we are. So you can't say anything because you didn't watch it.
That's true. I will have to,
from now on. And that was your job.
From now on, I'll have to watch
it. That was your responsibility to watch Undercover Boss.
I'm going to have to, if the Phillies are in the World Series, I'm going to have to get somebody to tape it.
You're going to have to DVR that.
This is my job, and since you pay me in sandwiches, I'm going to have to dutifully do my job.
There you go. See? Let's take a break. We're right back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
What the hell are we doing in Afghanistan, you ask? According to Washington's War Hawks, we're there to win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people. Key to this strategy, we're told, is to establish the legitimacy of the central government, led by the famously incompetent, vain, arrogant, aloof, and corrupt President Hamid Karzai. And how's that going? Well, at least they pulled off a national parliamentary election in September. It was meant to show democratic progress, thus bolstering the stability and credibility of the government. Unfortunately, there were some unpleasant incidents during the balloting. Boku unpleasantness. More than 3,000 cases of gross electioneering fraud have poured into the Election Complaints Commission, with nearly 60% of them considered serious enough to have affected the outcome. How gross, you ask? In Kandahar province, where the president's brother, Ahmed Wali Karzai, rules as an autocratic strongman, some 50 parliamentary seats were being contested. Amazingly, the list of winners were all from Karzai's political faction. And, get this, Ahmed Wali had the list of winners in his hands before the election. In a third of the provinces, the fraud was blatant and widespread. A cell phone video, for example, caught officials in one district polling place haggling with a candidate over the price of buying votes. In another district, local police handcuffed and removed three groups of election workers from their polling places, then presented the, quote, results for them to sign at the end of the day. In a northern province, gunmen slapped, dragged, and otherwise coerced people to go to polling places and vote for the gunman's candidate. This is Jim Hightower saying, this so-called election shows that there's nothing legitimate about Karzai's government, and nothing legitimate about America's involvement in Afghanistan. It's time to get out of there.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
I want to go back to the privatizing of Social Security for a minute. Because I think it's important that we understand. When you look what's going on in France right now. They're in the streets, basically rioting in the streets, protesting, marching, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the streets over the French government wanting to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. And, well, I guess there's two parts. There's 60 to 62 for one group, and then I think it's 63 to 65 for another. And, you know, I got to be honest. I look at myself, and we're going to be doing this here again, because we've already raised, was it 67 now for my age group? They're talking about taking it up possibly to 70. I've even heard of possibly 75. I'm 43 years old. My body is beaten and broken. You know, two knee surgeries. A hip that's got a hole in it needs to be replaced, a broken neck, you name it, I seem to have had it. Work-related stuff from doing hard physical manual labor. The human body has not kept up with being able to recuperate from this stuff. And we want to push people an extra several years and then reduce the benefits for them. You know, what we need to do is not punish the working people of this country, but fix the system. And as I've advocated from the very beginning, what we should be doing is we should have a system where there are no caps. This is a society insurance program. It's for the good of society. We should have no caps. It should be about a 5% tax, 2%, 2.5% on employees, 2.5% on employers, all the way up to infinity. And that money goes into one big pot. And based on your lifetime earnings, you get a portion of that back. And then at the end of it, we need to means test it. If you have a worth greater than $10 million, I don't think you need the $1,000 a month or $1,500 a month from Social Security. I'm sorry. Congratulations, you did very well in your lifetime, but this is an insurance policy aimed at stamping out poverty among seniors. To me, that makes perfect sense, Jake.
You know, the right's going to fight that. They're gonna say, look, you're taxing me, and I get no benefit.
You get the benefit of having a society where people aren't dying in the streets. You benefit by having a society of people who aren't sticking a gun in your face. You benefit from a society of a place where your mother and your grandmother and your children are going to grow old with some security. And you know what? If you did that well, where you had a great, you know, and whatever the number is, 10 million, 100 million, whatever. Do you think the people on the Forbes 400, the billionaire class, do you think they need Social Security? And here's the other part of it. Most of them, they don't pay it. So we need to make all income taxable. That's the other part of this. Because what we're doing, honestly and truthfully, we're not taxing, we're not putting Social Security on everybody. It's just people who work. Just people who earn wages. And that is a failed policy right from the start. And then we only tax the top, what, $106,000? So if you made, you know, $70,000 a year every year of your life, you paid tax on absolutely every penny that you earned. Where if, you know, the CEO, you know, the guy from DirecTV, the CEO guy who made $15 million in salary, he pays on the first 106 and that's it, scot-free for the rest. I say you got to open it up to every penny of it. Lower the rate on everybody, open it up all the way to the top. You want to spur the economy? You put that additional 8% into the pockets of the workers. Because right now we're paying about 13% for Social Security. 6.5% from the employer, 6.5% from the employee. You drop that down to something reasonable, 5%. And I think you put more money into people's pockets. Now remember, this whole thing was a construct by Greenspan and Ronald Reagan. This was a way to get more money into the pot so they could spend. You know, they like to say, well, you know, we did it because, you know, the pig was going through the python and we needed, you know, to get the baby boom generation to pay for their retirement. Nonsense. They needed money to hide their budget deficits. They needed money to hide the fact that they were blowing, well, they were blowing money like Republicans. Spend, spend, spend.
You would think the conservatives would like the idea of lowering the tax and stimulating the economy, which it would. I mean, for most people, that you're talking, let's see, you're talking from down to about 5%. You're talking over a year, you're talking a pretty good amount. And most people would spend that, put it back in the economy of their communities, and that would be absolutely an economic stimulus. You would think the conservatives would like that idea. Now, are the conservatives going to go along with no limits at all? You might have a problem there. Would I be in favor of it? Sure. You might be able to get something, you know, move it up considerably higher than 2006. If you're going to do that and have it work, you're going to need to index it. Then you don't have to come back.
2006?
I mean, 106,000, excuse me. If you don't index it, you're going to be susceptible to the political winds. And if you come back, depending on when you come back, you might not get that raise when you need it. So I would index it, and that would take away the problem of the political influence.
Well, at the end of it, it comes down to it's got to be straight across the board. And we've got to, you know, everything is income tax, is in my opinion. So all these hedge fund managers who are making, the one guy who made $4 billion last year because he bet on the right one, you can afford to pay a couple of shackles. You can help society out. Especially at a time when we're in grave, not earned income, dividends and interest. All income.
Yeah.
And even if you did that, even take it down to 3%. Because you're taking a whole revenue stream that isn't there. That we right now we're not touching. There are the very top in this country is getting away with having to fund the programs that keep society stable. Look, if you don't want a stable society, I understand that. But you're not going to be able to build walls big enough and hire enough guards to keep the people out when they're hungry.
Just talk to a guy today, businessman. I would say late 40s, early 50s. When we started talking about Social Security, I mean, he didn't realize how it was constructed. The first thing out of his mouth, and I hear this a lot, well, when it's my turn to retire, Social Security won't be there. I said, the government just came out with an audit and said it's solvent at 100% until the year 2032. And 20 years after that, 75% or better. The average has it in their mind that, well, it's not going to be there.
That's if we do nothing.
That's right. That's if we do nothing. And then I explained it. Look, the cap is 106,000, and you can make $1 million, $5 million, $10 million a year, and after $106,000, you don't pay a cent. And he on his own said, well, you know, the rich are getting away pretty easy on it. I said, yeah, that's right. My point is, the average person, I don't think, understands really how Social Security is constructed and how simple it would be. Simple in concept, not simple getting it passed Congress. I mean, the simple answer is just lift that cap totally or lift it considerably and then index it. Either one of those would bring in considerably more money over time. And you wouldn't have to worry about this. Well, we're going to have to cut back in benefits because we're running out of money. Shouldn't have to do that. Shouldn't have to do that, especially as you have said. The human body hasn't evolved since 1935 when Social Security came into play. Human body hasn't evolved where magically at late 50s and early 60s, people that do hard work, sometimes earlier like you, your body's telling you, I got to get out. I can't work anymore. And that hasn't changed. So we have to, the Social Security system has to evolve with it. And we have to, as a society, again, this is one of these questions we're going to have to face as a society. And again, overwhelmingly people appreciate, so of all the government programs, that is the most positive in 99% of the people's minds.
Well, because the conservatives have been telling us for 75 years, next year it's going to fail. Next year it's going to fail.
But you'd be amazed how many people believe that. It's like anything.
I mean, it's not going to be. You've got a media structure that's bent on destroying it because they understand that Wall Street is where it's at. Their money comes from Wall Street. The wealthy are bought and sold on it. So if you can consistently convince people that there's a problem, if you can consistently put it in their ear, it's not going to be there. 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 Eventually, people start to buy into it. Look, they are not going to allow that to go belly up. It's not going to happen. You would have revolts. You would have a massive revolt from the people who, like the bonus army. We had to actually use the military on them. I don't know that we're ready for that.
But yet, how many times have you heard politicians and conservative talk show hosts say, well, Social Security is going bankrupt? Well, no, it's not. It's not, but yet they get away with it. And the Democrats, we attack the Democrats a lot because they deserve to be attacked, but all too often, and it's not the Democrats' fault that the conservative talking heads say that, but all too often we let them get away with it.
Well, it comes back down to the thing that, look, we don't have the same megaphone that they have. The corporations control the media. It's that simple. And that's the mean. They want that money in Wall Street. That is a massive source of revenue for them. Just think if they could get their hands on it, how many fees they could take, how much, administrative work they could do. Boy, that would be a massive boom for Wall Street.
But yet it makes, and here we are, I mean, the Social Security debate. I mean, I was heavily involved in it in 05, and now that, my brain's churning and it brings back all the arguments. And at the end of the day, the simple argument for Social Security is this. Look, if you want to invest in the market, that's fine. I mean, there have been periods that I've made money in the market. There have been periods when you made money in the market. There have been periods when we took it on the chin. I'm still not recovered from 3 years ago. When I retired, I retired
you
the wrong time.
You took it all right. It wasn't on the chin.
I took the money out and boom, the gods of the money, just punched me right in the mouth. And I still haven't totally recovered from 3 years ago. My point is this. You want to invest in the market, that's all well and good. But you don't use money that you're going to have to live on and you're going to need that to live on and sustain your life the rest of your life. If you want to invest in the market, you invest in money outside of Social Security. That makes perfect sense.
Yep. Anyway, let's take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith. you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Some politicians say the unemployed won't look for work until their benefits run out.
Ed has been laid off from his pipe fitting job for over 18 months.
I'm here to tell you, being out of work is no fun. It sets you back in life. Benefits provide for less than half your wages. There's no health care, and your family suffers. To those politicians who think anybody would rather be collecting unemployment than working, I say come join us. We won't forget on Election Day.
This Labor Day message brought to you by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, Richard Bloomingdale President, Frank Snyder, Secretary Treasurer.
Your common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, the Chamber of Commerce is coming out and saying, well, you know, all the money that we're getting from overseas, oh, just a very small amount. And we've got this really great internal way of tracking that. But we're not going to tell you, and we're not going to tell you where it comes from. And I was surprised over the weekend. I guess really not surprised that the New York Times and the Washington Post both threw us under the bus for the Chamber of Commerce. Pretty much saying, well, you know, it's that liberal group who's pointing out the fact that they're taking money, that the chamber is getting money from all over the world, that they're getting it from countries like Bahrain and countries like India and Russia and Dubai and Egypt, and they're getting all this money from around the globe. And, well, but it's really nothing, according to the Times and the Post. And the more I thought about it, the more it makes perfect sense. Look. These papers, they need the ad dollars. And the Chamber of Commerce is spending $75 million attacking Democrats. Spending $75 million going after anybody who voted for health care, voted for financial reform. Why? Because they're bought and paid for. So when the newspaper goes, oh, yeah, come buy one of these full-page ads for $100,000 a pop. You know, I would have loved to have seen the article in each of these papers, and if there were an ad on the next page for the Chamber of Commerce, because as Think Progress points out, the Chamber of Commerce has 300,000 members that are non-U.S. based. 300,000. Now the Chamber said, "Oh, we just have a relative handful, 300,000." The U.S. Bahrain Business Council and U.S. India Business Councils have raised at least $300 in direct contributions to the chamber. At least $300,000. The chamber confirms that $100,000 came from 115 AmCham groups. These are foreign companies giving money to the Chamber of Commerce. That's going directly into their general fund. So now you look at all this money that's going into this fund. They've identified $400,000 of obvious money. That's not to say what the 300,000 members donated as well. So you could be looking at a nice chunk of change. And they really, honestly and truthfully, did nothing in these two articles, one with the Washington Post and the New York Times, to call the chamber on it at all. The Democratic Party, however, they've produced an ad that they're running.
Carl Rove, Ed Gillespie, they're Bush cronies. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they're shills for big business. And they're stealing our democracy.
spending millions from secret donors to elect Republicans to do their bidding in Congress. It appears they've even taken secret foreign money to influence our elections. It's incredible. Republicans benefiting from secret foreign money. Tell the Bush crowd and the Chamber of Commerce, stop stealing our democracy. The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And that's, you know, a little bit harsh, I guess. But the reality is, look, if the money's coming from overseas and it's going into their general account, that is freeing up money. I don't care how you slice it. That is freeing up money to go after Democrats. And that's what they're doing. 85% of the money that they are spending is going against Democrats. Think about that for a second. 85% of that $75 million that they're going to spend. And in this next month, these next couple of weeks, they are going to be hammering the airwaves.
We talked about a report coming out that total compensation levels of third-party expenditures is about $300 million. And you're right about that 85% figure. It's going at a ratio of about 6-1 to Republicans.
And then you wonder. Then you wonder why. I point to this story that I saw in the Patriot News on Sunday. Goldilocks approach. State needs middle ground on Marcellus Shale tax. You know, and they write, well, you know, one tax was too high and one tax was too low. Oh, but one was just right. Are you kidding me? Look, what the House passed was very reasonable. In fact, it isn't even the highest in the country, although the chamber loves to say and the Republicans love to say it. It's not. It's spin. And I'm telling you, tomorrow they are coming back. The senators are coming back and they need to hear you. They need to hear that, you know what? We want a sane Marcellus Shale tax. We want something that's going to help fill our budget holes. We want something that's going to help protect the environment. We want something that's going to help keep these people in line. And one of the things that scares me to death, Jake, and we have talked about this for years now, Pennsylvania is a state that has a very large freshwater supply. And I believe the next 100 years, you're going to see wars over water. Oil's done. We're going to be done with oil soon. It's water that we're going to be fighting over. And here in this state to have such an amazing resource that we're willing to just, hey, for some natural gas, we're going to screw up our water supply. I got a problem with that. That's why I do believe we need to have strict oversight. You need to have plans in place, or if something goes wrong, that you can fix them, so we don't have like we had in the Gulf with the Deepwater Horizon's rig spewing oil, and we still don't know what the devastation from that is, and we may never know. I mean, we know that they lied to us. We know that BP held back all the information. We know that. So that's what worries me about this.
I don't know that it's even fair for the critics of the higher proposal to say it was too high simply by comparing state to state, because Pennsylvania is at the very epicenter of this huge, huge fine, reputedly the biggest in the world. So you're going to have long term, certainly, maybe even now. I don't know the numbers, but I would suspect there's probably more wells in Pennsylvania, certainly in West Virginia, because of the size of the state. So to compare the two, I'm not so sure that's fair. But long term, we're going to need more inspectors. And here's another thing. We talked about this before, but I believe it's a very real possibility. What about on down the road? Once these wells become mature, and maybe some of the companies have kind of left the state, but we find that we have added problems which we can attribute to their mining procedures. What happens then? Who's going to pay? You know who's going to pay if we don't have adequate resources?
We are
the taxpayer of Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And it's not like we're gouging these people. First of all, I think Pennsylvania should be rewarded because it's here. It's Pennsylvania's land. It's not their land. It's Pennsylvania's land. But beyond that, we have legitimate concerns about the cost in several big areas. You're talking about contamination of water. you're talking about added resources as far as more inspectors. All that is a huge, potentially huge added cost in the future. And the taxpayers of Pennsylvania should not have to pay for something which was caused by people who are gonna reap billions and billions of dollars of profit in the future. That should be borne by them. And I think that's fair, and that's the way we should go. Now, do we go that way? So far, their money has bought some pretty powerful people, up to and including, it seems, Tom Corbett.
Yeah, I got to tell you, the more I read about Corbett, the more I learn about him, wow, we're in trouble. If he wins, we're in real big trouble. And that's everybody across the state because, wow.
Well, I have a real problem. I mean, since we brought up his name, he's fair game. I got a real problem with what he did with the investigations now. I mean, those who were convicted,
they deserve
to go to jail. They broke the law. They violated the law. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem is a man who has all the resources of the state.
Selected prosecution.
And he's going after people, and the more people he convicts, the better it looks for him and his chances to become governor. And you look at previous situations, what they did, they recused themselves. Because there is, and he'll say no, but there's an obvious conflict of interest. And they could have very well passed that on to the U.S. attorneys, and the U.S. attorneys could have done the same job probably with a lot less expense.
Yep. I loved how they did the perp walk with all the Democrats so that they could make him, Tom, the great Democrat slayer. But they never went after the Republicans. They never really went after the Republicans. What they did is they gave the Republicans an opportunity to clean out all their hard drives.
Well, the high
profile. Did that.
High profile is Mr. Purcell from Philadelphia. But isn't it just a coincidence that this high, and it will be high profile trial,
sure,
the biggest since Dion, after the election. So he won't have to antagonize people within the party because Mr. Purcell is very powerful and has very powerful allies to this day. So he don't want to make him mad because he wants to become governor first. Then he'll go after him. Be interesting to see what comes out of that trial.
Acquittal.
Actually, they've already lost two, right? I believe, right? They've lost two.
I only know of one, the Romali one.
No, I also lost one. In fact, he was from my home county. He worked for Vion.
Yeah.
I forget his name.
Sean Romali. It was the guy who
won. No, not Romali. That's not the only one they lost. One of his chief assistants. In fact, he was from my county, and one time he ran for county commissioner. His name escapes me, but he's the one that's suing the Democratic Legislative Committee for expenses. He said, hey, look, I'm broke. I don't have any money. I need to be reimbursed by you. And they said, no. He said, okay, well, I'm taking you to court. So that'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, too. But they've already lost two high-profile cases. But, hey, it's like, throwing mud up against the wall. Let's see what sticks.
Let's see what sticks. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back to wrap things up. Stick around. We're right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized, and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8-hour 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Wired.com wrote this past week, a California student got a visit from the FBI after he found a secret GPS tracking device on his car and posted the photos. His friend posted the photos online. The post prompted wide speculation about whether the device was real, whether he was being targeted in an investigation, and what the authorities would do now that he found it. Well, it only took him 48 hours. It turns out the device was real. The student was being secretly tracked, and the FBI wanted their newly discovered device back. The kid took this car to go get it worked on. Happened to see some wires hanging down from the tailpipe. Said, gee, what's that? Pulled out this thing about a foot long, and hey, wow, that's a highly sophisticated tracking device made by a company who only makes stuff for the FBI. And what's interesting about this is it's not illegal for them to put a tracking device on your car. They don't even need a warrant. They can come onto your private property, put a tracking device on your car, and there is nothing you can do, according to a recent ruling by the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. They said that it is legal for law enforcement to secretly place a tracking device on a suspect's car without getting a warrant, even if the car is, as I said, parked in a private driveway. And, you know, I loved the end of, which is where the police, you know, the FBI came, said, hey, give us our thing back. And the FBI guy told the kid, we got all the information we needed from you. You don't need to call a lawyer. Don't worry. You're boring. That's the response the guy got. You're boring.
I would, if it was me, I'd still entertain, I don't know, a lawsuit. I don't know if there's any grounds to that, but.
Well, the ACLU is now looking into filing.
I got a problem. I thought private property was sacrosanct. I guess not. Of course, if you look at the provisions of the Patriot Act, I mean, the government doesn't respect your property at all. It means nothing to them. If all they have to do is present a request for to get in your home, search warrant, and all they have to say is national security, and they're in. I mean, we could put on a whole 2-hour show, 3-hour show, actually, on the effects of the Patriot Act. Most people have no clue.
Yep.
The power that we gave up, the constitutional rights. But Obama's a communist.
Yeah.
I mean, it just blows my mind.
And we want Christine O'Donnell to fly in on her stick.
The Middle Ages, when
people were convinced they were witches, and then they looked for them, they certainly found them. And this is a bit risky. I think we were more judicious in saying that we want to have real evidence, and I'm not going to cite what the intelligence agencies are saying unless I have the evidence for it. If I had that, witches. Well, then I would do it.
The witches. That was Hans Blick. Remember Hans Blick? Blix, the guy who went into Iraq and said there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, our government sent him in, and they
didn't like his answer.
Out. We pulled him out. Well, we, meaning the Bush administration, pulled him out prematurely.
They wanted nothing to do with him.
But my guess is he would believe that Obama should be executed and he ought to be treated as a war criminal.
I just listen to this stuff, and I mean, it's just, of course, the head of the Republican Party in Wisconsin there is saying, you know what, we need to execute Obama. Is that what we've degraded into? Is that what it is, Jake?
Or they want him impeached because of health care. That's a good one.
You know, as I was talking to Eric tonight, I mean, I think we both Eric and I have reached the point of where you just look and you go, there's so much that isn't. There's so much that's being thrown around that just is not reality. And you've got these people who really honestly believe that they're fighting for some mythical freedom that's being taken from them. All because they heard some kook on the radio. And look, whatever I say, don't take it at face value. Go look it up. And please, by all means, I'm not telling anybody to take up arms and go shoot up a bridge. I'm not telling anybody to do anything insane. I want you to vote. I want you to be an educated, informed, active voter. But some of the stuff I'm hearing from the extreme right, And really what's turned into the mainstream right is scary stuff.
As our friend Mike likes to call in and say, you know, this is the conservative world. Have these people involved in the Tea Party, and some of them, I will be generous with them. I think they have good intentions. They're just very much undereducated and underinformed. They have basic concepts about government and basic concept about the Constitution. But have they really stopped and think, have they thought about the consequences of some of the Tea Party candidates? What kind of a society would we have if they actually get their way?
We'd have freedom.
If we have a much smaller government and a much smaller, more to the point, much smaller government oversight. What kind of we will clearly and at a rapid pace turn into a corporatocracy if we're not there now.
Oh, I would say we're right there.
I mean, this thing with if the chamber, we're not, we're very close.
This thing with the Chamber of Commerce, it's not a front page story everywhere. I mean, I really did not know that they had foreign chapters. I thought it was the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce did what was in the best interest of U.S. business. I'm sorry, what are you doing in India? Oh, what are you promoting U.S. business in India? No, you're not. You're taking money from over there, trying to get our laws passed to get crazy people in, like these free traders who want to then ship our jobs over to India.
I mean, we joke about it. They tell us their name is Bop. My name is Bop. No, Bop, it's not Bop, it's Mahatma. But we joke about it.
Are you being racist?
No, I'm not being racist. I'm trying to poke fun at a very serious problem.
Yeah, well, there's a TV show on outsourcing. You know, I saw the movie, which was an interesting movie where the guy gets sent over to India to, you know, train a bunch of call center workers. And, you know, he's basically a slave driver trying to get them to meet these certain numbers. And, you know, he finally whips them all into shape and they're all working the way they're supposed to. And they're kind of happy and, you know, things are kind of going good. And then the company comes in and says, oh, what? You know what? We can get cheaper workers over here. You need to go over there and do that over there with cheaper workers even still. And it never ends. It never stops. And you hear, you know, I hear people talking to me about the wonders of the free market. Well, that's what the free market brings you. It brings you a bunch of corporate marauders who their job is to go find the cheap, most exploitable labor. And I guess that's the way that you define winners and losers.
And think of the Indians and the Pakistanis, you know, and I don't begrudge them. I mean, they're human beings, and they're trying to survive, too. But the jobs in America that they replaced were, you know, were good jobs for the most part. These computer geeks, a lot of the ex-steel workers got into computer science, and they got jobs, some of them six figures. And, you know, corporate America figured out, hey, we can take your jobs over to India, and we can pay them $10,000 or $15,000 instead of $100,000, $110,000, $120,000. And so it is in many facets. They've replaced good-paying American jobs with very low-wage workers in other parts of the world. And I understand, Rick, that even the jobs that are now in Pakistan and India, they're paying too much, and now some of them are going to, in search of lower wages, are going to Africa.
Yep. Well, I said that from the beginning. You knew that was going to happen. Anyway, our last story of the night, President Obama. You know, everyone likes to beat up on him, it seems, our friends on the right. But what's amazing is that at this point in his presidency, compared to that of Bill Clinton and Ronald Reagan, he's got better approval ratings. In a recent survey by Gallup, it showed that Obama's approval rating was 48%. You can compare that to Bill Clinton's, who was 42%. And Ronald Reagan's, who hovered around 42% at the exact same time. So it's kind of interesting. If you remember, when Reagan, during his first midterm, he lost 28 seats in the House. Clinton lost a good portion as well, but Reagan lost 28 seats. Wow. So he's not the deity that our friends on the right would love to, and the history that they would love to rewrite. He was not the most beloved. In fact, he should have been impeached. But the weak-kneed Democrats refused to do it.
Iran-Contra was a disgrace. And every time I see the ex-colonel, Ali North, portraying himself as this patriotic American who only did his job, I mean, he just stepped all over the Constitution. And in fact, if you remember, Rick, Ali North would have been had a prison term that he would have had to serve, except for a technicality. He was guilty, and he got off on a technicality.
Yep, he sure did. If you remember George W. Bush, he stood at 38% in 2006. His party lost 30 seats that year. So it's not all bad news.